Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball
with Air Sport. Watch every Munster and Leinster game only on the Air Sport pack. Visit airsport.ie.
So we're joined in studio by Brian O'Driscoll. Eddie O'Sullivan is on the line. Evening, Eddie.
Evening, Joe.
So you're very welcome. No wins in 111 years and now 2 in 3 games is quite ridiculous.
It's like a bus, you know.
Yeah.
But I think it was special because I think the build-up took us so intense. You know, nobody had any excuses on this one. Like in Chicago, New Zealand felt they were cut out a bit. They were missing their second rows. So I think both sides knew this was for the full bag of chips. And at the end of the day, there was no doubt who were the better team on the day. So that made it all the more special. The fact it's on Irish soil as well. I think being in Chicago at the time, I think it was a great day. But the fact that it wasn't in Ireland, I think a lot of the Irish public missed out on it. So certainly last Saturday made up for it.
I think everyone sensed, even Joe Schmitz, was that the weekend was a cut above Chicago.
No, I think so. I think it was evident. I watched it at home and on my own, fully in control of the remote, with the occasional pesky kid coming in before bedtime. And I ordered a taxi because I was going out for dinner that night. And I ordered a taxi immediately on final whistle. And the taxi man, when I got in, said he has never, not since Italia 90, has he seen Dublin as dead. Not one person on the street. So the whole country has been captivated by this, by the column inches that it's gotten and the you know, airtime that it's gotten. This has been built up for months.
Yeah.
And this was the game, we mentioned before, England was the game against them 18 months ago. Now this has been the game since the Six Nations. Yeah. And we're not the only country that was interested in seeing how it was going to pan out. All the home unions were, all the New Zealand public were very keen. So to have all of that put together and have the most complete Irish performances potentially I've ever seen, it just lent itself to a phenomenal, phenomenal day. The atmosphere looked electric on TV. The players all talk about being best ever atmosphere. And the scoreline didn't reflect the showing of the game, to be honest with you.
Yeah, no, that's a lot of people's sense about the scoreline. And I mean, I suppose, Eddie, like in a way, there's no cup at stake and it's difficult to draw any hard conclusions or ramifications for the World Cup. It just had almost a throwback quality. It was just a standalone, your best against our best. It's 1 versus 2 and let's see who comes out on top. And actually, you know, we will try and draw conclusions later on, but that is enough when it's an occasion like that.
Yeah, I think it was a standalone game for sure, Saturday. But now you get out the far side of it, you can start speculating on the back of it. And I think that we went into the game on the basis that this was one we could win. The lads obviously believed it. You could see that from the very get-go. I thought, being in the stadium, you got a sense after the first... Once we turned over the first ball, once CJ Stander turned over that first ruck in the 5th minute, you could see that New Zealand knew it was game on. And as the game went on, they looked more and more... I suppose out of their comfort zone. Like they played as hard as they could, but they just couldn't get a grip on the game really at any point. And you always felt that we were just in control of the game pretty much for most of them. They had a purple patch, I think from like the 55th to the 65th minute, where they had a couple of chances that went awry for them through their own kind of misjudgment. In fact, on some occasions, but. Like once we get over that, you know, I just couldn't see a way back for them, and I think they knew that themselves. It was an air of invincibility about us, or an inevitability for them. And in fairness, they kept going, but I just, you could sense that in the stadium. It just said it from the word go that it was on, you know. And you get those moments, and like they're very special when you're there to witness them, you know.
I think the really interesting thing about it was, and what became very apparent is they're a side that rarely have to go to Plan B. Plan A always works for them, and they always, you know, they just revert to a little bit more intensity with Plan A. They looked, for the first time, I think I've ever seen, devoid of ideas. It looked as though there was a green blanket no matter what. We look stretched very rarely. You see how often, how many touches their wingers get, how many scores their wingers get. Ben Smith was almost anonymous. Rick Ioane had a couple of runs, but for the most part was smothered. And you were wondering, where are they going to get their scores from? I agree with Eddie that, you know, when TJ Perenara came on, they had a little bit of a purple patch. But you know, they still went and threw 50-50 offloads where ordinarily they stick and they score tries. We got into the passing channel, or they didn't quite hold them. And that comes from some inaccuracies, but more so from the scramble defence and the constant pressure they were put under. The amount of good decisions made from the team as a collective, but also individually. There's, you know, performers like Gary Ringrose, who, by, you know, if you look at the performance, didn't do anything exceptional, but the small detail of him shutting down options before they really came to fruition, I thought he had an outstanding game. Incredibly busy Bundiaki, and then, you know, our back row, I think for the most part their back row was anonymous. You know, Kieran Reid, their captain, hardly ever showed. I thought of all them to play well, I thought Scott Barrett, when he came on, did quite well. I'm not a massive fan of Liam Squire. I think he's nothing on Jerome Kino, and they need something in there in the sixth jersey. And Richie McCaw remains irreplaceable, because Ardie Sevilla, I think Sam Kane's a better player than Ardie Sevilla, but Sevilla had, again, one or two good showings, but for the most part was totally outplayed by our full back row.
Yeah, when you talk about the defence there, and you've alluded to certain things which were going on, those small decisions which have to be made again and again and again. It is the first time New Zealand have been held trialist by their home union since 1995, and Joe Schmidt was quick to pay tribute to Andy Farrell afterwards, as you might expect. So we, in the main, like the point was made on TV, it was a tight game. This wasn't a stretched Irish defence. It wasn't going out wide. How do you keep a game tight? How did they manage to stop New Zealand getting out wide?
Well, I think the collisions, for the most part, they won a lot of collisions. And when they did soak tackles, they decided not to commit numbers stupidly to rooks. When the opposition gets in behind, it's rare enough, unless their support is completely separated from the ball carrier, it's rare enough that you're able to get back and then compete for ruck ball and slow it down. Mm-hmm. So what they decided to do, their selection policy at ruck time as to when to have a little go for it. We saw Stander early on, Peter Manny got a couple, one or two others, you know, managed to slow ball down, even not turning it over. But the amount of times that they realised there was nothing for them and they just fanned out. Mm. And that's the difference between, you know, quality defences, when they really understand what's happening, what's transpiring in front of them, and when there's an opportunity to make it a 5-second ruck, or when there's an opportunity, do you know what, we're not getting any joy out of this whatsoever, let's just, you know, pull back in our spaces, make sure we've got good width, and just hard off the line. And there was not that much drifting went on. And I talk about problem solvers. Gary Ringrose on the edge, thought even when he came on, Carberry made a couple of great reads, and you know, guys just getting into the passing channel when necessary. When Bowden Barrett went through a gap at one stage, he threw a pass. Rob Kearney filtered in and picked up the offload where it looked like a certain try. These sort of moments, you're going to be broken by the All Blacks. We weren't broken a lot, but when you are broken, how do you fix that then? I thought the scramble was exceptional, but for the most part, we'd very, very few system errors, because we were incredibly organised and a very clear picture as to what we were trying to do.
Eddie, Ireland did a huge amount of territory in that first half, especially after that first 5-minute onslaught, which they managed to withstand. A huge amount of territory, and there was a massive pace in the game. And I think Hugh mentioned in the commentary after 17 minutes there'd been 106 tackles, I think. And yet, I'm curious for your thoughts. You know, 30 minutes in, Bowden Barrett kicks a drop goal, which I suspect, you know, he's just going to try and do every game now. And he did have the penalty advantage. He kicks a drop goal and it's 6-6 after 30 minutes. And even at 9-6 at halftime, it felt like a poor enough return, like a worryingly poor return. The scoreboard was not quite behaving at that stage.
Well, there's a bigger picture there, is that you've got to, there will be those times when you dominate. And the giveaway was that the penalty count against New Zealand in the first half was really high. I thought they were definitely in yellow card territory. I thought Stuart Barnes was generous with them at times. He'd warned them. And Steve Hansen said it after. And that penalty stuff was silly penalties that you don't normally see them give away. Well, I think that was a sense of the pressure they were under. They were prepared to try and stop the game to get themselves like back into it. So in those situations, you've got to stay on point. Yeah, you can get frustrated, but all that does is put fuel in the tank, because as those, they're soaking that pressure and hanging on by their fingernails, which they were at times, they're beginning to see that they're going to get overrun at some point. And you're sowing the seeds of doubt in their head in that first half. That, like, and if you come out then in the second half and you double down and do the same thing again from the off, they start to think, well, this is not going to be easy today, or maybe we're not going to get this done. So that's how you do it. You're going to keep backing yourself. And I agree with Brian that probably the starting point for us was our defence, and the starting point for our defence was our line speed and our physicality and the first collision. And they were playing off very slow ruck ball for them, you know. And I think that really threw them out of their tempo, that their cadence was off. And that's where they were throwing kind of loose passes at times and, like, making bad decisions. And that's pressure. That's pressure defence. So, in the back of my mind, I was thinking the exact same thing that going to have time. Like, we're better than 3 points ahead here, but got to see the bigger picture and say, look, this is all part of the bigger picture of putting doubt in their mind. And you have to back it up. And once Stockdale scored, I think that was, like, the first sign to them that it wasn't going to be their day. And they didn't give up, but I think we all started thinking, this is it, you know, it's ours to lose from here on. But you've done all the groundwork first to get to that point.
Yeah, what were your feelings around that time?
Yeah, it felt like a big try. I agree as well with just to go back to a point that Eddie made about the yellow cards, and it's a real bugbear for me as well. The penalty advantage and a player killing the ball, knowing that they're coughing up 3 points. I think referees have to get strict on that. World Rugby have to change the laws where if someone intentionally kills a ball with penalty advantage, they've got to send players to the bin. And Whitelock, with 3 minutes to go to half time, did exactly that, knew what he was doing. They were happy enough because they were stretched to give it up.
Yeah.
And I think that is something that really needs to be brought in, because we want to see more tries. You want to see players not doing what Barrett did and, you know, going for drop goals. You saw we nearly got one off a penalty advantage where Rob Kearney knocked on just before the line. Mm. You know, they're going to the air, they're making it exciting, they're playing with intent. Mm. We've got to encourage that. But I agree on it didn't feel as though they put the pressure into points, but when Stockdale did score his try, it did feel like it was a huge try. And to go 16-6 up, and more importantly as well, when you knock that conversion over, it might have only been a two-pointer, but it doesn't really make a difference when you go from 8 to 10 points because it's still two scores, but it felt like it was a big mountain for them to climb, even New Zealand, because of the way we were playing, because of the way we were defending.
Yeah.
It just looked, it felt as though they were going to have a real moment of genius to break us down.
Yeah, the pattern had been established at that stage. It was looking good. And like, was Barnes within his rights to say to Kieran Reid, look, one more, the next fella's getting a yellow, and then to say to Rory Best, look, I've spoken to them. Was that fair enough handling the situation, or was it kind of crazy he wasn't hitting them with a yellow? Matt Williams had a stat from a couple of years ago. And he was just, he tweeted out on the evening, and he was talking about the number of penalties a team might have to give away to earn a yellow. Mm. This is about 3-4 years old, but I'm sure either way there's a residual hangover. And he was in South Africa, to get a yellow was every 11 penalties. Australia, it was every 12. New Zealand, it was every 43 penalties that they got a yellow. I presume it can't quite be that bad still, but there will be a continued culture, I'm sure.
I don't really have that much of a problem with Wayne Barnes. People who always give out about Wayne Barnes, Ireland, you know, have had their moments with him, as have New Zealand. Mm. I thought he did a pretty good job, to be brutally honest. I thought he let it flow quite well. But that's got to be a directive for referees in general. That isn't actually a directive currently. And maybe there hadn't been enough penalties in a short space of time for him to go to the bin immediately. But I feel at the same time, I don't think New Zealand could have felt hard done by had he produced a yellow card towards the end, because there was a lot of concerted pressure and they were soaking the whole time and they were happy to give away multiple penalties because they felt it was going to be 5 points if they didn't.
Yes. I totally take your point, Brian, that this is about many, many moments across 80 minutes. And yet within that, there are some key moments. So you've talked about the Stockdale try there. It came on 47 minutes.
Yeah.
And the period around it was fairly hectic.
It was, yeah. Obviously, we started the game again, and I think our restarts were a brilliant part of the game. Both challenged extremely well against on their ball and, you know, did pretty well in containing our own. Devon Toner is a big part of that.
Yeah.
But the game does hinge on huge, these sort of games, the tightness of them hinge on huge moments. And if you go back and watch the first 7 minutes of that second half, you have the Stockdale block down. Chip over Kieran Reid, where he fumbles it. If, you know, ordinarily he doesn't fumble that. He pops it up to Jack, what's his name, 13, the outside centre, Goodhue, and he maybe gets in or gets scragged at the line, they probably score,
yeah.
And then the momentum's with them because we've just come back from half time. And then you go 2 minutes later, you go to the penalty that Peter O'Mahony earns, which leads to the line out, which leads to the Stockdale try. We managed to get the penalty. Peter O'Mahony steals it. You know, everyone's high-fiving. But by the laws of the game, that's a penalty the other way. He's not supporting his body weight. He's got his elbows down on the ground. But there's two New Zealand players obscuring the view of Wayne Barnes. He's on the wrong side of the ruck to see that he has two elbows down. The TMO, or the assistant referees, you know, 60 yards away on the other side. It's over close to the touchline. But Wayne Barnes doesn't get a good view of it. Peter O'Mahony is phenomenal over the ball. It's known. He actually got in a really good position, but the legality of it,
okay,
for me was quite easy.
Yes.
I saw it first time. I was in control of my remote control. I was
said that several times it. Now. Clearly, there's a sore point.
I replayed it, and I was like, we've done extremely well to get away with that.
Stephen Ferris actually pointed it out as well on the TV later on. He was like, should have been a penalty as well.
Yeah, and that's 9-all then, potentially. Not guaranteed, with the way Bowden Barrett, you know, has on-off days, but he was kicking all right that day. So 9-all, and it's the first score of the second half. Big difference between 9-all and 16-6, and all the momentum is with Ireland. You go on to the line-out, and I was quite amused by, you know, listening to Hansen's chat during the week about how, you know, we'll definitely see something from Joe's team. You know, what it'll be, we'll have to wait till Saturday. It's painful enough that they scored our first phase against them in doing so.
Yeah.
One of the power plays that Ireland had practiced, obviously had studied exactly what the back three do, manipulated the defence into doing exactly what they wanted to, created space in the backfield. And huge credit to Jacob Stockdale for going to the boot so quickly again after having a block down. The easy thing for him to do would have been to tuck and try and carry through contact. But the space was in behind. And to break that down, you know, they went to a five-man. And we've had some success off five-man lineouts. You remember back to the England game as well. But the switch play, Dane Coles had come off the back of the lineout just off the bench, fired into Sexton, probably made him throw the pass a fraction earlier than he would have liked to Bundy, who threw a beautiful pass across to Stockdale. If you watch the lineout, every one of them knew what they were doing. Cian Healy had been on the five. All of them got to the 15 at least to create a good space for Stockdale and Rory Best, who dropped out onto the wing to run into. And that's what cued Ben Smith, who would ordinarily have covered across with Damian McKenzie to fill in for him on the open side. He realised they came down their side, saw Rory Best dropping to the touchline. That's why he charged in and realised his two defenders that he had to defend with were Whitelock and Retallick. And that's why he accelerated so much to close that space down. And that created that huge void in behind. And that's where Aaron Smith was the only one ultimately that could make a decision to get into that space. And he didn't have the legs on Jacob Stockdale, who enacted a beautiful little chip and chase. He barely broke stride and beat him to a bouncing ball, which, you know, could have gotten away from him, but he was aggressive in getting after it. And then, you know, the momentum, even though he was tackled five out, was always going to carry him over. So a brilliant Ireland try. So that is hatched from the training ground.
Yeah, there's a huge amount going on there, obviously. So the line out and then everybody getting over on inside the 15, as you say, to create the space out wide. You've Rory Best hanging out there. Obviously, that's very much his job to stay out there and draw a man. You have Stockdale, who knows what his role is. And then you've Sexton and everybody inside him, trying to make it look to everybody that they're going. Of course we're going inside. We've done it all game. Here's my pot of three. We're going inside and delaying the pass as long as possible to Aki, who I presume that's not an easy run to make. And people have said Aki's pass out to Stockdale
beautiful
was
pass.
Brilliant as well.
Nefson pass. Yeah. You know, he sticks in me inside shoulder. That's the difference between, you know, the defence that's charging one direction being able to change direction and get across to the other. So that ball right out in front. Stockdale actually, he looked a bit disinterested, which is exactly what he needed to do. Right. A bit like Bundy Aki had done in the Six Nations, that he was kind of, you know, just almost being wasteful, being a little bit lazy. So he wasn't showing any intent to do anything. Everyone else was showing deception that weren't getting the ball. The guy that is getting the ball looks disinterested, gets the pass from Aki. And then he has multiple options depending on what happens. Ben Smith doesn't close that space. He tries to get to the last defender and pop it to Rory Best.
Yeah.
And Ben Smith will look back and, you know, and probably look and realise Rory Best, not the fastest player on the pitch. Did he really need to close that space? But this is all happening in hundreds of a second.
Oh, yes,
and
course,
you don't have
yeah.
an opportunity exactly to identify who's who. You know, you look at Ben Smith's own hookers. Dane Cole's one of the best athletic hookers out there. You know, he's thinking, right, I got to get there and close that space. Someone will cover for me where I've left off. Damian McKenzie possibly could have shifted across a little bit earlier because
yeah.
he seemed, you know, even when it went back blindside, he still seemed to be covering a huge amount of ground by the time the chip went in and didn't get a finger close to Stockdale. So I wonder about him, whether he worked hard early.
Yeah.
When he realised it was going over the other side where he thought, oh, that's their side of the pitch, you know, I'll let them look after it. Yeah. So it was a magnificently constructed power play, and we come to expect them from Joe. There was other ones in the game that nearly got there, but when you get one off first phase, as we've seen in big games like England and New Zealand, and they are often the difference
yes.
in the winning and losing, you know, you have to tip your cap to them.
Absolutely. Eddie, you highlighted last week some defensive deficiencies on New Zealand's part at Twickenham, and I suppose in the Stockdale try we saw them taken fully advantage of. Do you want to come in on anything in particular Brian's outlaid there?
No, I think it's covered up pretty well. But yeah, they played two full backs in the backfield, and the full backs closed the gate very quickly. They push up to the outside. So once that ball went to Sexton, the left sweeper pushed up, and then they switched it back to the right, and the right sweeper pushed up, but leaves nobody at home. So it was well constructed. I think Kieran Reid fell as well, and he was out of it. If you see, as the lineup breaks up, you see Sam Whitelock looking at him, thinking, would he stay or would he go? But he went. And Reid was on the ground, so that took one defender out the line. But Stockdale read it really well and pinned his ears back. But it was a game changer. That was the game really right there. That kind of set it up for it. And you know, when you, as you say, you work on those in the training field, and sometimes you work on them and the opportunity doesn't arise. So you've spent a lot of work doing something that may not even happen because you haven't got the right field position or something,
yeah.
or the right moment in the game. And then even sometimes when you do get the moment, something goes wrong, the lineup bobbles or passing on the money. So it's great when you put all that work in and it comes out, and that's, at the end of it, it's the difference between the two teams. There's a great sense of satisfaction around that.
Yeah, an amazing moment. We are talking here with Air Sport, home of Irish rugby, on Monday Night Rugby here and Off the Ball. Steve Hansen had a comment, Eddie, I wanted to put to you. He was very gracious, I should say, not to misrepresent Hansen. He certainly said the best team in the world won, arguably, and they may well be favourites going into the World Cup, and we'll see how they handle all of that. He did, of New Zealand, say, we've tried to change how we want to play, and we're still stuck between the old way and the new way. We haven't got it right yet. When we get it right, we'll see some big improvements. Is that something you're observing?
I was a bit surprised to hear him say that, because I agree with Brian that they play a certain way and they're very good at it. And if it's not going right, they just up the tempo and the aggression. And we saw that in the second half. And they did butcher a few chances themselves. So it might be him projecting that he may have to relook at things. I can't imagine they were looking at things differently last week, because I didn't see a lot different in the way they played than they've been playing right all summer, you know. And that's been the way they run the game. And they're so good at it.
Mm.
You know, it isn't broken, don't fix it. But I think he might be projecting where he might have to do is look, because there was times there when they tried to go around Ireland because they couldn't get through us. They were using pretty standard front up runners and we were getting off the line and smashing them. And then they tried to go around us a couple of times, and we were comfortable on that because we won the collisions, we got our spacing right, we got our balance. So I think he if he had it back, he might have looked at going through us a little bit more with runners coming from behind the playmaker and exploiting the spaces between the players. That's the best way to go through a team if you can't get around them.
Mm.
And I think he was talking maybe along the lines that this is something they have to look at themselves, because they were shut out. They haven't been shut out of a rugby match for 20 years, and they were shut out on Saturday. So that's food for thought for him, certainly. And he might have been projecting onto that when he talked about changing the way they play. But I couldn't really see anything that different about them. They're always going to have little wrinkles and stuff, but
yeah.
they play their usual shape right through the game. But it just wasn't coming off them. We had their number and we shut them down comfortably.
It does obviously generate the question now, who's the best team in the world? I don't know if one game changes that, Brian. If they were to play 10 times at this stage, who might come out on top is kind of curious thought.
Yeah, it's a very hard one to answer.
Yeah. But it's at the point now where it is a hard one to answer.
Well, it's starting to get there. It's not a ridiculous conversation topic, that's for sure. I think that this Irish team has earned a huge amount of credibility and respect in New Zealand. I think the Chicago was seen as an aberration, where there was it was embarrassing, and you know that won't happen again.
Yeah,
but for it to happen so quickly again, and it's you know it's 2-2 since 2013. Arguably, should have been, you know, 3-1. So there's been a shift from where this Ireland team feels as though, or how they feel when they take the field to New Zealand. I also think that comparing the 2015 World Cup winning New Zealand team to this one, there's a big, big gulf between the two. Big gulf. And that's not just not based on one performance at the weekend. I you know, you look at how phenomenal they were and the strength of depth in every position when Sonny Bill Williams isn't getting on their team, the World Cup winning side from the off. You look at Smith and Nonu in the centre. I don't see them having two centres anything close to that. I think Crotty's a nice player. I think Goodhue's a nice player. But the two of them together, I don't know if they work. I think they need a bit more X factor in there. I think they miss Sonny Bill for his offloading game and his ability to create a little bit of magic. Leonard Brown was decent, although he's a bit up and down. I don't know if he's a brilliant link player. So for me, I still think there's question marks around them. I don't think, as I mentioned before, that Squire is anything as good as what they've had before. I wonder, will they go to Barrett at six now because he had a good showing off the bench? So they definitely have a few things to work out. You won't see Retallick and Whitelock having games like that again for a long time. You know, a penalty for Retallick and two knock-ons, ultimately the one that ended the game.
That's a symptom of pressure being
put on them though as well. But the first penalty he gave on 7 minutes was slapping the ball out of the scrum half's hands. Know, a teenager doing that and you'd be furious. He's got a lot of caps to be doing, making silly errors like that.
It was interesting on all the stats from metres gained, Ireland gained 6 more metres, clean line breaks, it was 5-5. Basically every metric, it was similar all the way through except for penalty count, which was double scores. It was 5-11, which was the amazing thing. Eddie, how do you see the balance of power if they were to play 10 times?
Yeah, I agree with Brian there. I think this New Zealand team is not the same vintage as the last team that won the World Cup. Their midfield is not at all settled. Obviously, Beauden Barrett is their best 10, but their midfield combinations, they really haven't settled on anything solid. They don't have a full-back solution. Ben Smith may have to go back there. McKenzie is really a bit small to play back there. He brings certain aspects to it, but as a kind of a goalkeeper person, like who's rock solid under a high ball, who can't be beaten in the air, he's not that kind of guy. And then their back row is a bit out of kilter as well. I don't know. I don't think Squire brings that much to the party. I think Barrett could play there, but he's more like a lock that can play a six than a six that can play a lock. So he wouldn't have the same, I suppose, engine or mobility like as a Tyke Byrne. And then you've got the open side. They do need Sam Kane back. You know, Artie Savea is a great athlete, and he's all action. But I don't think he's that good as an open side. I mean, we had the advantage there. Whether we had Josh Van der Flair or Dan Levy, I thought we had the edge there on Saturday. So their back row isn't settled, their midfield isn't settled, and their back three isn't settled. And like that's very unusual for New Zealand 9 months out of a World Cup. And there's a bit of navel gazing to go on when they go home. And they know that themselves.
Yeah.
And Kieran Reid hasn't had a vintage season either. You know, he was probably one of his worst games in an All Black shirt last weekend. He made a lot of errors. And there'll be question marks about him now. You know, where is he sitting in terms of a year's time when he lead the team? So that's a lot for Steve Hansen to mull over in the winter. So they're definitely not the same team as they had before. And I think they know that now. They didn't have to wait until Saturday to find that out. They knew that during the Rugby Championship. So I think they're going to have to hit the reset button in a few areas. But look, they will. They're like that. They can. They don't make the mistake of that. They're going away. They're not going anywhere soon.
Yeah.
And in some ways, it's good for them. They've found out where they really have problems at this stage, and not in 6 or 8 months' time.
In fairness, Joe Schmidt probably summed it up well. Like, I mean, I don't know whether they're regarded as the best or the second best matters that much. He says afterwards that Ireland might deliver the same level of performance again, and the All Black team might beat you because three of the chances that they created, they might take one or two of those three. But you know you're in the ballpark, you know you can foot it with the big boys, and when you can eke your way through an arm wrestle like that. So, I mean, that's the knowledge the team have now with the view to the World Cup. Whether they win as favourites or not, I mean, I don't know if it has any tangible bearing on things. I did want to get your thoughts on Sexton versus Barrett for the World Player of the Year in the context of that game. You're obviously on the voting committee.
Yeah.
Have you made your decision yet, the committee?
No, the committee hasn't. We actually have a conference call this evening.
Okay. What will Brian O'Driscoll be saying in that conference
call? I'll be doing some listening early on to see what my Southern Hemisphere fellow panellists will be saying.
The wider sense is it is Sexton versus Barrett really at the moment.
I don't think I'd be talking out of turn by saying it certainly feels that way.
Yeah.
I said South Africa had to have an enormous November for Faf de Klerk and for Marks to step out. Ione again has been very good throughout the year, prolific, but by his standards, not brilliant in November. And Barrett hasn't been as good in November as he was at certain times of the year. People are probably a bit hung up on his not taking his drop goal in Wellington against South Africa, but you forget that he scored four tries against Australia as well. Mm-hmm. So it feels as though it's one Johnny Sexton against Bowden Barrett. So I'm really interested. It's a conversation that I'm looking forward to being part of.
What way are you voting?
I would say I have a fair idea which way I'm voting. I think on the balance of what's gone on this year with someone that has pulled it out of the fire for Ireland in drop 45-metre drop goal. I know it's not based as much on provincial play, but managed to win European Cup and the Pro 14. I'm not sure if I'm right in saying, has he won every game that he started this year, possibly, or certainly in the mix for that. I'm not sure if he started against Clonathley earlier in the season, but it's one or two then if he's lost that he started. Mm. Won the series and now beaten. They will be unbeaten in November. I think it's very hard to go away from a guy that has been front and centre in all of those performances and all of those victories. So. Yes, I will be voting for the Ireland number 10.
Yeah. It's hard to argue with the logic, Eddie, as biased as we probably all are.
No, I think if you look at Jonathan Sexton's calendar year, the Six Nations, he was the key man for Ireland, Grand Slam, with his club, wins two trophies. Then he steers Ireland to a serious victory in Australia, and then he wins the jewel on Saturday. It'd be hard not to give it to him. I certainly would feel it'd be hard done by if he didn't get it, but... Stranger things have happened. Brian didn't get it one year and he should have, so you never know.
Yeah, 2009, wasn't it? You were certainly highly fancied.
Got pipped.
Yeah.
It's like
he should have got it, there's no question. He should have got it that year.
Yeah. There was a few points to finish on briefly, because we mentioned Sexton here and you've touched on O'Mahony. Like, there's any number of great performers there. Ringrose you mentioned as well, Brian. Like, what O'Mahony did was fairly extraordinary. That back row was fairly extraordinary. The third choice, number 7, came in and was remarkable.
Standard was really good. Do you know what? Standard does a brilliant job without any of those those storming runs, eking out a yard or two when you really need it. When it's for the hard yards, there's no one quite like him and James Ryan.
How is James Ryan doing it?
I don't know yet. I actually haven't worked it out.
Yeah,
I'm keeping a close eye on him and he's making 4 and 5 metres when he should be smashed to the ground.
Yeah.
And it's a skill, but Standard takes a little bit more punishment because he doesn't have the footwork that James Ryan has at the moment.
So you think with Ryan it's more footwork as a going through people?
Yeah, and it's angles of run. I think Standard probably takes on the responsibility of, do you know what, there's a wall in front of us. I need to just set us up for the next phase. If I can get half a yard, great. But more often than not, he gets a yard or two and maybe 3 on occasion.
Yeah.
And the difference between that and getting smashed back a yard is huge for the next phase of play. So I think our back row was outstanding. When you beat New Zealand, you're not going to have too many poor performers, are you? Devon Toner was imperious in the line-out.
Yeah.
And funny, in fairness, the two line-outs were steals more than bad throws. Okay. Certainly the second one, it was just Whitelock got up, or both Whitelock and Ritalik got one each. So they were good steals rather than wonky throws or bad lifts or misreads. So you'd forgive them that. But everyone was really good. Keith Earl's footwork in the first half was mesmerising when they did a brilliant power play. Stockdale, you know, Bundy, Rob Kearney, super solid at the back, got into that passing channel for the Barrett offload. Everyone has to play well. Marmion, you could Schmidt, list all Schmidt 23.
Schmidt was effusive about Marmion. One slight complaint, and it's almost unfair to bring it up in the context of such a brilliant team performance and a very good performance from him, was maybe his box kicking is probably not at quite the level it will have to get to if everybody is to say, you know, he's got nothing to work on. That might have been the critique.
He knows that. Yeah. He knows that. It's difficult when you're compared against the world's best.
Sure.
Aaron Smith is right up there as well. You know, some very good box kicking in by his standards and a relatively ordinary performance. But yeah, there's no doubt that it's the one of the weaker parts of Marmion's game. But he's never disappointed for Ireland. Mm. You know, good pass. His quality of pass was good.
Is it? Because I saw that critiqued over the weekend.
Yeah, no, I thought it was pretty good. It's not. It's not Peter Stringer. It's not, you know, Conor Murray. But you're dealing with a different caliber of, you know, in that skill set. But he's so brave. He makes good decisions in defence. He organises. He's very fit. He's good lines of running and support. It's hard in a winning performance to really pick
it
holes
in
something. But if you have to, he knows his box kicking will need to get better for World Cup next year.
Eddie, any personal favourites for you amongst the Irish performers?
No, it's hard to pick a performance because I think across the board on a day like that, when everyone played so well, it'd probably give them something out of the match, which is unfair. But I thought, you know, as a pair, I thought Furlong and Healy put in huge shifts, like, especially early in the game. I mean, the amount of carrying and tackling they did and the cleaning out, like, they were just relentless.
Yeah.
And I know they both came off. They probably were on their last legs, but they put in such a shift. I thought, like, that's a huge plus for everybody else when you're two guys who have to work the hardest most of the day in the set pieces, follow up by that sort of work rate. I thought they were outstanding, and you know they set the tone in many ways. I think.
I haven't even mentioned the team taking a step forward for the Haka as well. That can look foolish 20 minutes later, but it was symbolic, I think, of.
I wasn't aware of it. Couldn't really see it on the TV, so
I think they missed it. Unfortunately, by the time the TV cut to the wide picture, they were standing a few yards ahead of the line. Okay. You probably saw it, Eddie, did you?
Yeah, they just took a step forward. Yeah, okay. And the crowd reacted so. I thought they might take another one, but they didn't.
Yeah, I know. I'd say the crowd was thinking, oh my God, are they going all the way here?
I'm sure. Willie Anderson.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Did you want to come
in? Yeah, just one final thing. Just talking about all the performers, and I agree, Tadhg Furlong is just, you know, is for me the best tight end in the world and arguably should be in that short list for World Player of the Year. He's had an outstanding 18 months. But you look at the amount of ball carriers in this Ireland team now with Ryan, Furlong, Healy, Peter O'Mahony, Stander, Josh van der Fleer picking really good angles. Devon Toner, you know, probably not his greatest strength, but still a very efficient ball carrier and proficient too. I just think that we are blessed with how many ball carriers are in the team and that everyone feels comfortable on the ball now. And it's a far cry from where we were, you know, 7-8 years ago when you had to go to a Stephen Ferris or a Sean O'Brien. That's no longer the case. Everyone can carry and everyone's comfortable in the knowledge that there's a great chance of gain line success from whoever has it in their hands.
Yeah. Eddie, I guess a final point, one of the Heineken star comments coming in from Grace O'Sullivan. Brian has sort of given his answer on this already. What an incredible performance, start to finish. Just wondering if you can recall a more complete 80-minute performance from an Irish team.
No, it's hard to. I suppose if I'm being biased, I thought in Croke Park against England, it was a pretty good performance that day as well. I think we ticked a lot of boxes, you know, and there's a lot of pressure on. So, different environment, different situation. But yeah, probably a game I felt after that we pretty much got everything we wanted to do done. And I think there was a sense of that on Saturday at the end of the game that every aspect of the game they set out to set their goals and they achieved them. And if you do that, no matter who you're playing, you're probably going to come out the right side of it.
Yeah, an amazing performance, lads. Thanks very much. Eddie, thank you. Brian, thanks
for
coming to the studio. Appreciate it.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball
with Air Sport. Watch live Pro 14 action on Air Sport this season. Visit airsport.ie.